This is David's Book Talk, bringing authors and book lovers together in a unique way since 2009. Visit us at davidsbooktalk.com and join the conversation at facebook.com/davidsbooktalk. But first, pull up a chair, relax, and enjoy today's episode. Here's your host, David English.
Hello and welcome to David's Book Talk. And we have a New York Times bestselling author. Yes, his name is Craig Johnson. He has written the 12th Longmire mystery. It's hard to believe it's 12. It's called An Obvious Fact, and he's here to talk about it. Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
I hear a phone in the background.
I know. I apologize for that. We have two lines here at the ranch. I'll get in sometimes. You know, people call in the middle of an interview. Hopefully my wife will grab that. So anyway. Yeah, it is hard to believe that it's been, 12 years, because I got, David, you were one of the early guys. Like, you were one of the guys that, picked up the cold dish and said, hey, this is something special. And so you've been on board since the very beginning. So I wanted to thank you for that. So.
Well, cold dish is something amazing.
I mean, just, oh, well, thank you.
It's one of those books I remember where I was when I was reading at the end of it. That's how good the book is. I mean, that's literally I think it's the longest book you have, isn't it? And one of the longest.
No, not really.
Really?
I think actually, Hell Is Empty is, I think, one of the longest.
Really?
Length is concerned, yeah.
I would have bet the first one was.
it started out a heck of a lot longer, I can tell you that much. So, whenever I first started writing that first novel, I think I made a lot of the mistakes that I think a lot of beginning authors make, in the sense that I thought, well, boy, if I get this published, it's the only book I'm ever going to get published, so I'm putting everything in it. And so it was like about 650 pages long, kind of like War and Peace and Absurd. When I finally got an agent, the first thing she said to me was, if I have to deliver this in a wheelbarrow, it's not going to get published. So you're going to have to cut a lot out of this. I think I cut about 200 pages out of the thing before.
It can't be fun to do that. Or is it fun? Is it fun for...
Actually, it is. Like, because you learn a lot, because, whenever you're writing a book, in a sense, in many ways, it's kind of like going to a place you've never been. You've seen photographs, you've looked at maps and all that, but you haven't been there. And so you really don't know what it's about, until you finish the book and, type the end, and then all of a sudden you know what that book is about, what the message is, what the themes are, the subtext, everything. So then you have that knowledge of being able to go back and make that decision on what it is that's important enough to continue, in the book, and then what's not, what you take out. And it makes it an infinitely better book. I mean, just because a book is long does not mean that a book is good. As a matter of fact, most of the time, it's usually the other way around. And so for me, that was, probably an essential part of learning how to be a novelist in the process of that first book, of cutting that much out. Because I learned, what the heck this book is about. You really don't know that until you get to the end.
You seem like you're a fearless guy. I mean, I've met you. I mean, nothing seems to scare you at all. Nothing. I mean, and you're very. I mean, you're very even. I've never seen you get angry. Of course, I don't live with you, but
you haven't been around the ranch during irrigation season.
Nothing.
All different. Viking penguin knows to not even call during irrigation season. Because I'm out here fighting the irrigation on the ranch, and there are three practical parts in all irrigation. There's electric, hydraulic, and mechanical. And I guarantee you, if you get one of them going, the third one will fail. I'm pretty even keeled, and I try and keep it even keel in my life. I got enough drama in my books. I really don't need it in my life.
And that's the thing, when people meet you and they sense that about you. I mean, I've been to many of your signings, and you never get the slightest bit upset about anything, and it's remarkable.
Kind of a special relationship too. When you're talking with people who've read your books, that's something that I think, was probably illustrated probably by Robert Taylor, the actor who plays Walt on the TV show on Netflix,
right.
On Longmire. He, one of the times I was talking with him about it, and I just, we were sitting there having a good time, signing books for people and body parts and everything else on Longmire days one time, and he looked over at me and he said, this is important, he said, these people, they wait in line for 4.5, 5 hours, and they get 2 minutes of your time.
Right.
2 minutes. And he said, you've got to be there. there. You've got to be there and, you know, and be respectful, you know, of the amount of time, you know, that they've put in to come and see you. And I think that that's an important thing to remember, you know, even, you know, as your life goes on, like at whatever successes you have, you got to remember who it is responsible for those successes. That's that person that's reading your book.
Right.
That's an essential relationship for me. And that's the fun part about, you know, getting ready and going on, you know, one of these tours. Like, and I'm even getting ready to go on one of these, you know, Bataan Death March, you know, tours, like, as of next week. And, you know, for me, that's, you know, the travel part is difficult, you know, and, you know, jumping up at, like, 4 in the morning, like, which I do at the ranch, but it's no big deal. But then, you know, getting showered, getting dressed, getting packed, taking the rental car back, you know, getting into a strange airport, getting through TSA, you know, getting your tickets, you know, getting to the plane, all of that, you know, it's a little bit of a trial when it's an everyday deal. You know, whenever Viking Penguin sets these tours up, I mean, you're basically moving every day. And, you know, and I'm not complaining because, you know, there are an awful lot of authors out there that, you know, that wish they had, you know, the kind of, you know, tour representation, like the kind of support that I get from Viking Penguin. So I never take it, you know, for granted. But, you know, it's work, you know, whenever you're, like, moving every day. But then the wonderful part is that, you know, you get to go to these bookstores, you get to go to these libraries, you get to meet all of these people that have actually read your books. And, you know, that's the second best thing that I do, you know, as far as, you know, what my job is. Writing is always going to be number one, but number two is getting to meet the people who read the book.
And you're always like two or three books ahead, so it's frustrating to come to your signings because I think you talk about books that I haven't even read yet, and I get so, oh my God, this is not fair, you know? It's like I haven't read either one of those books.
Well, yeah, I'm usually like one book ahead like that because I'm usually writing the book for next year, whenever a book comes out, and you know, and it's the case, you know, it's just, you know, if you're going to put out a book a year, you know, that's just going to be the nature of the beast. Look at, and so I put out, you know, one book a year, like it, and then also sometimes put out a novella.
Right.
Just this year, like that, I had The Highway.
Oh, that was terrific.
Come out in the spring.
Oh.
Like, and then, you know, then, of course, An Obvious Fact, you know, coming out here on September 13th. And
right.
So, you know, and then I've got the collection of short stories that's just, you know, collections of those short stories that I give out, you know, to everybody that's on the, you know, the newsletter for at crayonjohnson.com. I send out a free Christmas short story every Christmas. And so, you know, Viking Penguin got together and collected all of those, like it made an anthology of those, Wait for Signs, which is a fun little piece, like it, because it's little glimpses into Walt's life that, you know, we otherwise, you know, maybe wouldn't get to see. And, so it's a pretty productive life. You know, I'm not, you know, nobody else is writing my books for me. I'm writing everything myself, you know, which I feel very strongly about. You know, but it's, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, it keeps you busy like that. And, but you are always, you know, kind of have your mind, kind of a year ahead, you know. Right now I'm working on The Western Star, you know, which is, the book for next year, just to, you know, irritate you a little bit more, David. Like,
exactly.
It's the one that takes place actually on a train. It's a little bit of an homage to Agatha Christie's Express.
Oh, right.
And the premise of the book is, of course, that, you know, from 1948 to 1972, the Wyoming Sheriff's Association had its annual meeting on a train called the Western Star, which ran from Cheyenne to Evanston, all the way across the state of Wyoming and all the way back. Like, and so the gist of it is that there are 24 armed sheriffs, you know, on this train. And as Walt explained to one of the younger sheriffs, he says, 24 armed sheriffs on the train. And Walt goes, yep, when we started. So it's you know, it's a fun piece. Like, and I'm having a good time writing it. But, you know, I also have to look back, you know, try and remember the book that I wrote last year, the one that's coming out, An Obvious Fact. And that's not too difficult, though, because this is a special book for me, because I don't know why, but everything kind of fell into place with the writing of this particular book. The humor in this one, I think, is maybe right up there with some of the funniest books that I've ever written.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of humor in it. Like, and I think a lot of it stems, you know, from two things. You know, first of all, it's the banter between Walt and Henry, who have differing opinions on motorcycles, and also differing opinions on, you know, the social implications of, you know, I guess, you know, the damsel in distress. You know, Walt is kind of a sucker for damsels in distress. You know, whenever he sees a female character who's need of, you know, of help, you know, he just kind of jumps in automatically and does. And Henry, on the other hand, having known the history of the particular woman in this book,
right,
Lobo Jahowski, who is the woman that his 1999 Baltic Blue Thunderbird convertible is named for, like that, you know, has a shared history with Lola. And so, you know, he I think the way he explains it is that's the problem with the contemporary American West. In the sense that, you know, sometimes the one that's tying somebody to the tracks isn't male, it's sometimes a female. So it makes for a lot of problems, you know, with Walt and Henry during the course of the book. And then, of course, the neutron bomb that kind of, you know, hits, you know, about, you know, maybe halfway through the book is Vic Moretti, you know, arrives.
Oh, my God.
Fresh from a trip back, you know, from Philadelphia. And, you know, boy, she's always, you know, there are some characters, whenever I add them, it's like nitroglycerin. I know, you know, things are going to start popping, you know, whenever she arrives. And she arrives, of course, you know, in this monstrous, you know, pumpkin seed rental car, you know, that turns out to be a character unto itself. And it's a fun book, and it's got a really smooth pace to it. It's a very quick pace, you know. I mean, a lot of the people that have read this book, you know, previously are like, you know, boy, this one reads so fast. You know, I get through it so quick. You know, I had to go back and reread it again. And, you know, that's one of the fun things about it, because each one of the books will have a different kind of complexion to it, a different kind of texture to it. And this one, it definitely is like a fast bike, is all I can say.
Yeah, and I was going to mention that about Vic, the fact that when she does start to appear in the book, it's like, wow, this is really going to be fun now. You know? We had fun before, but now that's nothing compared to that somebody just dropped a load of dynamite right in the middle of a story, you know?
She doesn't have much of a sense of restraint, you know, and so imagine Vic in, you know, a small town in northeastern Wyoming with a population of 396 and only one police officer and 50,000 bikers, you know? So, you know that, you know, things are going to start happening.
And this is the Sherlock Holmes book you mentioned, the one that makes all the references to Sherlock Holmes, and they're funny too.
Yeah, it's kind of annoying for poor Walt, like that, because Henry, as they're getting ready to take off on this trip, actually reaches over and takes a book from the shelves, you know, of Walt's. I guess Walt doesn't have shelves. Walt just has stacks of books and beer cartons, you know, all over his house. And Henry reaches over and takes a book with him on vacation. And it happens to be Leslie Klinger's annotated short stories of Sherlock Holmes. Leslie Klinger's. And so it's an absolutely fascinating and encyclopedic book. And so throughout the entire book, basically Henry is quoting Sherlock Holmes at poor Walt, you know, and there's nothing worse than having the world's greatest detective quoted to you while you're trying to work a case.
Exactly.
And so it's a little bit annoying for poor Walt, but a little bit, you know, of an illustrative aspect of the book too, in that I always like to have some sort of a literary reference, you know, with each book. It's kind of nice because I think it works for, you know, people who read books and tend to read other books. And so it's fun for me to kind of include that. You know, with every one of the books, it gives them another dimension, I think, which is, you know, it's sorely needed. I kind of enjoy having it myself.
No, I was not prepared, I must say, for the shock that comes at the end of this book, and I'm still reeling from it.
Don't give it away.
I can't even mention what it's about, because, I mean, no, of course I would never do that, but I mean, I wanted to remark about it, because this is probably one of the most surprising endings of any of your books.
Yeah, it really is. Like, I mean, this one, you know, I mean, you're always looking at the endings, you know, because I'm not a big one for, you know, we discussed, you know, that the outline thing, like that, which is, you know, very, very important to me. Like that, you know, a lot of people ask that question. They say, well, did you know how the book was going to end? Did you know who did it, you know, before you started writing it? And my immediate answer to that is yes, absolutely. I mean, one of the, you know, I tend to refer to what I write as, you know, socially responsible crime fiction, in the sense that, you know, I'm not looking to just, you know, stack up bodies like cordwood.
Right.
I'm looking to actually have something to say, you know, socially, you know, culturally and all of that. You know, well, one of the biggest statements that you make in whodunit is who did it, you know, and so you need to know who that is, you know, from the get-go. And, you know, for me, that's one of the essential, you know, parts of the book that you write towards. You know, you have to know that, have that information, because you're going to work towards it all the way through to the end. And, you know, this one was no different. Like that, you know, I knew who it was, you know, and how I wanted to do this, you know, and exactly, you know, I generally have, you know, good strong images of, you know, how that book is going to end. You know, what's it going to look like? What's the tableau? You know, where are the characters standing? What's the, you know, what's the landscape, you know, that we find them in. You know, I want everything. I want to know all of that, because that closing image is, you know, a very, very important part of a book. It's a very important part of the statement of a book. And so just like the opening, you know, image, you know, of a book is a very essential, you know, part of a novel. I mean, when this book starts, you know, Walt is kneeling down on a highway, you know, right there at the base of Devil's Tower, the first, you know, national monument in the United States. And it's a very picturesque, you know, very scenic a tableau that we see Walt in, you know, as he does his job, you know, and explains how, you know, it had rained that morning, and it was, you know, with the advent of anti-lock brakes and all of this, it was very, very hard to read, you know, the sign, you know, even if it's, you know, the modern vehicular age, because, you know, that imagery of a cowboy kneeling down, you know, and looking for, you know, tracks, you know, or trying to read the tracks, you know, that's not a new image. That image has been around, you know, for as long as there have been stories about cowboys like that. But this one's a little bit different in the sense that he's not looking for hoof prints. He's looking for tire marks. And so, you know, you set an image like that, and then you kind of, you know, it kind of is a launching point for the remainder of the book. And then you've got to have a landing spot. You've got to stick the landing. You know, when you get to the end of that book, you've got to make sure that you give an imagery, I think, you know, that the reader can carry with them.
This book also has a... Yeah, it's... This book is one of those books that right there's a point in this book where it just gets so really good and you can't stop reading the book. And I love when you do that. And you seem to do that a lot with your books. I mean, and it gets you're enjoying it so much that you think, oh my God, I just love this. I mean, I just wish everybody could write like this, you know? And,
boy, you know, David, this is it's a wonderful interview.
People think
this is how interviews supposed to be done. I got to tell you, thank you so much. Okay, thank you so much. Okay, I think that goes back to that pacing aspect. You know, I think that, you know, you've got to have enough information like that before it is like that. You know, that the book can kind of like catch fire like that before it can really kind of take off. You know, you want to, you know, give as much information as you can, you know, to the reader so that they're invested, you know, not only in the situation but also in the characters and have a clear idea of who these characters are. Maybe not absolutely everything like that, but a very clear idea like that, you know, enough so that they're invested. And then, you know, then you got to start gathering momentum and things start happening like that, you know, and, you know, those dominoes start falling over like that. And by the time, you know, you get to the end, it should just be a breathless chase that takes you all the way to the end where you get to that final blank page and go, damn, it's over?
Yes.
Over, you know, and you know, what you hope for is that immediate response. I'm going to go back and read some of this again. You know, because, you know, you read for a couple of different reasons, like, you know, you go through a book, you know, for the plot, you know, or to for the story or all of that, like that. And then you hope that sometimes, you know, readers will actually go back and maybe reread some of the stuff to, you know, to kind of get a feel, you know, for the environs, you know, for the character, for the relationships, you know, some of the details that maybe they might have missed in that headlong flurry of reading, like that you kind of fomented, you know, with the pacing of a novel.
It's amazing. There's a lot going that goes into writing a book, and you think, I mean, I think of a book before and I think I could write like this, but to write like you write, the way you write, and it I mean, even though your books aren't 500 pages long, they still have to be. I don't think I'd like them as much if they were 500 pages long.
No,
I don't think
I would either. Like, I mean, it's according to the story. I mean, if you have a story, you know,
if it's interesting enough, yes, I can.
Yeah, you know, but it would really have to be an epic and intricate story, like, to bear that kind of weight. You know, and Walt's books, like, you know, they're you know, I refer to them as the books are his, not mine, like, which is, you know, in many cases the truth. You know, they're a case, okay, you know, and so Walt doesn't have the luxury of meandering around, you know, for a couple of hundred pages in figuring
exactly
out, you know, what it is that happened. You know, I mean, he really kind of needs to, you know, get it done and, you know, and move on to the next one. He's a civil servant, like, and he's a, you know, elected law enforcement official. Like, so if he took, you know, months, you know, to finish off each case, I don't know if he'd be in office after about 4 years, so you kind of have to have a little bit faster pace for that. But each story, you know, will kind of like predicate, you know, what kind of a pacing you're going to have or what kind of a structure that a novel is going to have. And, you know, fortunately, I'm with this literary press, Viking Penguin, who's very open to the idea of, you know, however I want to do it, you know, whichever way I want to do it. And that's a remarkable thing. You know, it's a really marvelous thing to have a corporation that's that big, but is that artistically minded, that they give me the freedom that I need to do what it is that I want to do, how it is that I want to do it. And, you know, after 12 years writing these novels, I'm probably, more fresh, than I am when I first started, because I'm just so invigorated by the entire process. It's a blast, to write these books. I have what always happens is the same thing that I hope happens when people read the books. I get to the end and I'm like, I find myself doing the same thing that I think a lot of people do, which is, a lot of people get towards the end of the books and they tend to tell me that they tend to slow down when they get towards the end of the books. And I have to admit that I do the same thing. If I'm writing one of the books and I realize I'm getting towards the end, I purposefully slow down, so I can have some more time with the characters in this particular, predicament that they find themselves in. I always know there's going to be another book. There's always another book, formulating in the back of my head that I'm, going to be ready to go with. And I actually write, the first sentence of the next book as soon as I finish the book that I'm working on.
Really?
Now.
Oh, interesting.
That having been said, there's just a little bit of a maudlin quality to finishing a book because, it's another segment, another aspect of these characters' lives that, that I'm leaving, and I'm going to be moving on to something different.
Exactly. I wonder, do you know everything about these characters by now? I mean, everything that's going to happen to these characters even as we speak, or are there some surprises that even you don't know about?
Well, I think there's always going to be an improvisational aspect, to writing. You have to be open to the idea that, that the characters are going to evolve, that the characters are going to change, and I'm open to that. I'm open to that idea. Do I have, an overarching idea of what's exactly going to happen to these characters and the timeline of this, and how their lives are going to play out and how these relationships are all going to play out and everything? Yeah, I do. I don't think that I could write without, having a strong sense of, what was going to happen and what was going to evolve with these characters. And, for me, that's part of the fun. To see, if I can get to that over the amount of time that I've got, to write these books. Because, you're always looking ahead a little bit and saying to yourself, okay, I'm in my mid-50s. If I'm lucky, I should be able to write for another 30, 35 years or so. That's another 30 books, past, what I've written already, with the 12 books I've got out. So that's like 42 Walt Longmire novels.
Don't get any older now.
That's not an insurmountable number of, that's a pretty amazing amount of books. If I could get that done, I'd be very, very happy to do that. So.
Right. Well, we don't want you to stop writing.
No,
a Walt book every year is just...
No, I'm hoping to keep at it, for the rest of my, natural born life. I'm happy to keep at it.
Now, you were writing, I think, in different months. The books were coming out different. Now, this one is coming out in September. Is that going to be every September now?
Yeah, it will be. We actually, a couple of things happened. First of all, I've always wanted to be a fall author for years and years. Even when I first started out with The Cold Dish, I really wanted the book to come out in the fall but it didn't. It came out in January.
Right.
And I tried to explain, to Viking Penguin that touring me out of northern Wyoming in January was probably not going to be, a good idea. That I'm stalled out, at some airport somewhere during a blizzard. It happened, numerous times. They moved me further and further and further into the spring as the 12 years went by. And finally, at my resting place was, kind of in May, June, which is really kind of tough, when you have a ranch, because that's when things really start popping. Things really start going here, on the high plains around, May, June. The snow kind of creeps away the hay starts growing. The irrigation needs to be done. Fence needs to be mended. You're doing a lot with the stock and all of that. So it's a lot of work at that point in time of the year. And so I was trying to get them to move at some point in time. I was like, okay, is there any way we can move either earlier in the spring or, can we go, later, in the summer or something? And ideally what I wanted to do was come out in the fall. And so, you know, we argued about this, you know, for a couple of years there, like that. You know, they really didn't want to do it like that because they felt like, you know, we'd established ourselves with a, you know, a spot in the calendar, you know, on the New York Times list and all of this. You know, they really didn't want to move me around a lot. And I got a little bit of extra ammunition whenever Netflix, you know, decided to pick up Longmire and put a release date that was in September.
Thank God for Netflix.
Yeah, and that really kind of gave me a little bit of added ammunition to say, you know, they're putting this television show out, you know, in September, and boy, they put a lot of money into advertising, you know, for that television show, and it sure seems like maybe we should be able to piggyback onto that a little bit, you know, to give the books a little bit of a boost, you know, and maybe that's something we should think about, you know, and how about September? And they finally said, yes, okay, we'll move you to September. And of course, it was one of those deals with the devil because they said, you know, well, the problem is people aren't going to want to wait an extra 4 months this year for a Walt Longmire book. And I said, well, that's okay. I've already got another novella written. And they were like, what? And I said, yeah, I've already got this novella, The Highwayman. It's already written.
Oh, what a book.
And ready to go. Like, you know, and I actually had it in my back pocket or hidden in my vest, you know, like a hidden card, you know, a hidden ace, you know, in the hole in a poker game or something like that. And I had it out like, and said, how about this? Like, and so I rewrote it a couple of times and got it into shape. And that's the book that came out, you know, in May. And it was a fun little book. You know, it was an interesting little book, something a little bit different to attempt to do like that. But it allowed me to move an obvious fact, you know, over to September. And so, yep, that's my goal is to be a fall author like that, to have my books coming out in September from now on.
Well, you succeeded once again.
Well, we'll see. Like, hopefully. Keep your fingers crossed.
No, I mean the fact that you actually got to be a fall. Well, actually, yeah,
oh,
September,
yeah,
September
yeah.
Well, 13th isn't really fall, but it's close enough.
It's close enough, yeah. I'll take it. Like, it's back at the beginning of the school year. Like, it's, I feel like I'm...
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, so you, it's such a great book. So, and like I said, but I wonder when you plan out the story. I mean, you say you know everything that's going to happen, but you ever get in the middle of the story and something surprising happens that you?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, that happens in this book. Okay, I think that's out there in that. In that area of writing that you need to be in. I mean, if you're standing in the pool, like, and your feet are solid on the ground, you're not in the part of the pool where you need to be writing. You need to be writing out in that part where you can't quite touch bottom. You know, you need to be taking some chances, you know, and doing something a little bit different with each book. I think that's kind of essential to the whole process, you know, in the sense that, you know, it's more exciting for you, you know, if you're writing the books, like if you don't know all the answers. And it's also going to be, you know, essential, I think, you know, for the reader in the sense that it's going to be a lot easier to surprise the reader, I think, if you surprise yourself during the course of the writing. I mean, I'm very big on the outlines. I'm very big on knowing everything there is to know about the characters, but I'm also open to the idea that there will be some improvisational moments that are going to happen along the way and things that are going to change a little bit and might surprise you, you know, as you're writing that book. That's the artistry of the book that I think that, you know, that you shoot for, you know, in every book.
Now, where do they film the series? Is it near where you live?
No. They film down in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Wow.
Is where they film.
Do you always go and watch it being filmed?
Not all of it. I usually go at the beginning of the season to kind of meet with everybody and, you know, and then I also, you know, in the off season, I'll sit down with the producers and we'll talk about, you know, the upcoming season, you know, and they'll give me indications as to what it is that they're thinking and how their directions they're planning on going and everything. We'll discuss those things. And then, you know, I'll go down like at the beginning of the season just to say hello to the actors because I've actually kind of become friends, you know, with a lot of the actors and a lot of the crew people and everything that are involved, with the show. And then I used to go down like that and be there, you know, whenever the books came out in the spring, they were still filming because they start filming pretty much in March and run all the way through into June. But now that I've changed the calendar year as far as the books are concerned, I may not be going down as far as that's concerned. But they still send me the scripts, and I go through the scripts, you know, and dutifully, you know, give them a response, you know, to, you know, each one of the episodes, you know, and a lot of stuff, you know, we go through, we'll agree on some stuff, we'll disagree on other stuff, but you know, hey, it's a process like that, and it is different. You know, I mean, you know, the writing of the novels is a dictatorship. You know, I go up into my loft, you know, and I dictate, you know, in my head, you know, what it is that's going to happen and how it's going to happen. And, you know, there really isn't any kind of committee as far as that's concerned. You know, whereas, you know, television is definitely more of an art by committee kind of thing. In the sense that you've got the overarching ideas and everything that the producers want, then you've got the individual ideas that the directors for each episode are going to want. You know, then you've got the crew members who are going to make decisions on wardrobe, sets, the lighting, the sound, all of these different things. Then you've got the actors like that who have, you know, definitive ideas about the characters and what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. So it's a little bit more of a complex undertaking, a television show as opposed to a novel. You know, a novel, that's pretty much me, you know, up there, you know, by myself, making those decisions on the fly, like that, and doing what it is that I want to do exactly how I want to do it.
And that's the great thing. I mean, you write the books, and nobody tells you how to write the books. You have total say over how the book is written and what's going to be in the book. I think that's incredible. I mean,
well, it's a singular vision that I think, you know, in many ways is sometimes important. You know, I think, you know, Orson Welles used to talk about that, you know, whenever he was making his films. He would say, you know, you need to have a singular vision, you know, something that you can dictate to yourself like that, you know, that's like a one-sentence thesis statement about what it is that you're attempting to do with this, you know, this particular art. And I think that's something that's, you know, important to, you know, for every novelist. I think that when you sit down to write the novel, you think to yourself, okay, what is this book about? What is it that I'm trying to say? And it's easy to get lost, you know, in the trees once you're in the forest, you know, and so you need to have that, you know, that needlepoint stitched message, you know, up there on the wall that tells you, you know, what that book is, you know, in particular is about, you know, to keep you from getting lost.
Now, what, you've been on the New York Times bestseller list. What's the highest you've been?
I think five. I think the last book last year was five, Dry Bones, like it, I think, was number five on the New York Times bestseller.
Did you ever think you'd make it that far up?
Oh, no. I mean, it's craziness. Like, you know, we've been on there like 7 years running now, and, you know, no, not really. I mean, come on. I write a procedurals about the sheriff of the least populated county in the least populated state in America. I mean, if I was shooting for a demographic, I probably could have done a better job. But, you know, I think that the book's kind of like, you know, hit a niche, you know, for a lot of people, you know, in the sense that, you know, they're a little bit different, you know, from a lot of the stuff that's out there. You know, they tend to kind of, you know, tease with the idea of being a little bit of literary fiction, a little bit of, you know, populist humor, you know, but they still, you know, are procedurals, like, and they still mysteries, like, and, you know, they're very character oriented, you know, but hopefully they've still got, you know, good storylines, you know, and good stories to tell, like that, and, you know, it's an attempt to try and do something maybe a little bit different from, you know, a lot of the stuff that's out there in mystery fiction. I think, you know, one of the, you know, the big elements are, you know, the humor in the books. You know, generally that's what people tend to write to me about, you know, about how funny the books are, like that, how much humor there is in the books.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of that tends to come from Walt. You know, Walt's, you know, the main character in the books. He's the first person, you know, narrator of the books. You know, you're in his head for, you know, 350 pages. Like, and, you know, a lot of the humor tends to come from Walt's worldview, you know, and what Walt thinks about things. And, you know, for me, that's one of the fun parts of the books is that, you know, that I don't sacrifice the humor, you know, for all of the serious issues that I'm dealing with, you know, because I think that, you know, once you shut down and start preaching to people, like, and lecturing people, you know, the humor leaves the room, and an awful lot of the intellect, you know, it tends to leave the room, too.
Right. I'd love to see a book with the viewers, that the first draft and then the final draft. I'd love to see the difference. We as fans don't get to see that, but I'm sure that there's a huge difference.
No, you don't want to see that at all.
Really?
You don't ever want to see that. Like, no. I work very hard, you know, to formulate the book that you get to finally see. Like, and I want that book to be just as good as it can possibly be. I don't want you to have to wade through what I wade through as far as, like, getting it to the point where it's worthy of that purchase price that you make, you know, at the bookstore. I want it to be the best product you can possibly have.
Well, people are spending a lot of money on the actual book, yeah. I mean, e-books
absolutely.
Are a little cheaper, but...
Absolutely.
So you want to... Yeah. Now, who does the audio of your books?
The audio of my books is done by a wonderful individual by the name of George Guidel, like that, who I actually got turned on to by a fellow by the name of Tony Hillerman, told me about him. I was having dinner with Tony like that, and I was in negotiation about the audio contracts for my books. And Audible.com, like that was, you know, going to do them like that. And they had a couple of different readers in mind, like that. And Tony said, if you can get George Goodell, get George, like at, you know, at a recorded book, like that. And so I was lucky enough, like that. And they asked, I said, George Goodell, and I got him. And George is just a magnificent performer. He's really amazing.
Does he get all the voices down really well?
Oh, he does, and he's just a consummate performer. Like, I mean, there's an entire segment of, you know, the people who, you know, listen to my books, you know, a very large segment of people who listen to my books, who George Goodell is the voice, you know, of Walt Longmire. And he's actually, you know, pretty wonderful for me too, like that, because whenever it is that I'm, you know, I've got a book that, you know, that harkens back, you know, to one of the previous books, and I need to refamiliarize myself, you know, with a book that I wrote, you know, like what, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, what I'll do is I'll take the CDs and put them in my truck and actually listen to that book, and have George read it back to me as I'm, you know, remaking that connection. To a previous book. It's kind of a painless way of being able to do that because, you know, I have a limited amount of time to go back and reread my own books. Like, and it's kind of handy because when you live in Wyoming, you know, you're driving all the time. And so George is kind of handy as far as that type of thing is concerned. But he does an amazing job, you know, with the books, and I torture him terribly like that because he has to be able to correctly pronounce, you know, all the Cheyenne and the Crow and the Arapaho and the Shoshone and then the Basque, you know, and all the Wyoming place names and everything. So I torture him, you know, on a pretty much a, you know, a full-time basis, but he always comes through for me.
Now, are you finished Western Star, or will you be finished soon, or...?
Yeah, I'm like about, I don't know, I guess halfway through the 14th chapter, so I've got, you know, maybe two and a half chapters and an epilogue to write on that book. But then I'll rewrite it, you know, until, you know, they drag, you know, the manuscript from my bleeding fingers. You know, I'm one of those authors who writes and rewrites and rewrites and rewrites and rewrites until they take it away from me. Because if I didn't have a deadline, if I didn't have a pub date, I would still be rewriting The Cold Dish, you know. Longmire book.
No, don't do anything to that one.
That might not be good. Like, I think, you know, you need to move on at one point in time.
That's right. So you're really neurotic then, Frank, is what you're saying.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah. I mean, you know, to an extent. I mean, you know, it's never going to be quite good enough. You know, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you know, I mean, you know, I go back, and even when I'm reading, whenever I'm, you know, doing an event, you know, somewhere, and I'm reading from one of my books, I'm editing on the fly, you know, from a published book. Because, you know, there's always something. There's always something that could have been done a little bit better, a scene that could have been just a little bit sharper, you know, a piece of dialogue where I think, oh, I should have said this rather than that. There's no end to it. You know, it's constant. It's continual, and I've just accepted that fact, you know, that no book is ever going to be perfect. It's just never going to happen. But I think that's, you know, that's a part of the respect that you have for the readers. You don't just throw stuff on pages, you know, and think, you know, they'll get through it. Don't worry about it. You know, it's important. Every word, every sentence, every right. paragraph. Every
now, sentence. I wanted to mention that there's an 11, the first 11 are all available in like a case now.
Yeah, there's a Penguin, I don't know what you'd call it, a collection, I guess. Like at a box set, I guess is what they call it. And, you know, all of the paperback books, you know, all 11 of the Walt Longmire novels are available as a set.
That's really cool. It looks really sharp. And it's going to sell a ton at Christmas time. Can you imagine? I mean, seriously. No, you laugh, but I mean, it's a great present for the holidays.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Look at, and then you have the entire canon of Walt Longmire's life. Look, it's sitting there before you.
I'm trying to picture that rally you mentioned in the book where they have a million... driver, really motorcyclists that show up every year?
Yeah, it's Sturgis. Look at,
a million?
Kind of one of the key elements. Yeah, last year was, I think it was the 75th anniversary of Sturgis, and they had over a million bikers, you know,
that's
from all
insane.
Over the world. And so, you know, that's the thing is that the book takes place in Hewlett, Wyoming, which is a, you know, relatively quiet little town of about, like I said, 396 people and a police force of one. Right. Which is actually pretty good odds. You know, generally, you know, if, you know, you got, you know, about 400 people per police officer with the crime rate that we have in the High Plains, that's actually pretty good. The problem is the little sister town over in South Dakota called Sturgis has this motorcycle rally every year. Like, it's like, I don't know, maybe half hour away from Hewlett. And so whenever they have their big rally in August, about a million bikers show up, and about 50,000 of them ride through and over into Wyoming so that they can ride by the first national monument, Devil's Tower. And so you've got this little tiny town in northeastern Wyoming with 50,000 bikers in it, a little offshoot of the million bikers that are over in Sturgis. Like, it just seemed like a situation that, Walt and Henry and Vic needed to be involved with.
And Devil's Tower's on the cover, which is really cool. So, and it's near where he's investigating this motorcycle is being run off the road.
Well, it's kind of fun. Like, I have to always remind people. I mean, that's one of the joys of the books, is kind of do a little bit of a travelogue, for the Northern Rockies and the High Plains. We're an area that a lot of people think they know a lot about, to give them the details, to allow them to really get to know a place is one of the joys of writing the books. I think that's a lot of the draw for people to read this type of fiction, is a chance to escape and go to a different place and learn about that place. And so there's a responsibility, I think, in that, to make sure that that you're honest about the place where you live. I live in New Cross, Wyoming, population 25. So it's important, to be honest about this little part of the world where I live, up here near the Montana border. And
you never know, all your readers could show up someday. I mean, they know where you are.
A lot of them show up at Longmire Days, I'll tell you that much. So that's kind of a blast. And that's kind of the fun, too. It's an opportunity to take people away a little bit, and educate them a little bit about a place that they might know or, that they might not.
Right, exactly. Well, we have to let you go. I know you have a busy schedule today, but it's been absolutely fabulous once again.
Well, it always is, David. You're always an incredible interviewer. And these are always magnificent shows, and I look forward to it.
That's right. That's because I love the books, because you really do.
I do.
Yeah, I love the books, so I can't wait for Western Star. I'm going to have that. Is that going to have a star on the cover, by the way, somewhere?
I don't know. Who knows what it'll have on the cover? I try not to get too caught up in that stuff until it's time to start worrying about it. So
I should mention one more time.
I'll keep you informed.
Right. I should mention one more time. The book's called The Obvious Fact. You got me saying the other one. Alpha and Viking in all your bookstores now. And this has been great. And this has been David's Book Talk. And we'll talk to you next time.
You have just enjoyed the podcast of David's Book Talk, brought to you by your host, book lover David English. Please visit us at davidsbooktalk.com, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and subscribe to our podcast. We want to hear from you, and we don't want you to miss our upcoming shows with top authors like Mary Higgins Clark, Patricia Cornwell, Lisa Scottolini, Jackie Collins, Nelson DeMille, Michael Connelly, Sue Grafton, Steve Martini, Dale Brown, David Baldacci.